Now, I want to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Heather Weiss. She's a director of family research at Harvard. She's founder and director of the Harvard Family Research Project. For over 20 years, they've been helping funders and policymakers and practitioners develop strategies to promote the educational and social success and well-being of children, families, and communities. She's really a shining example of a professor who moves seamlessly between the worlds of research and the worlds of policy and practice. I'm going to single out just a couple of the contributions she's made today. Her work focuses on one of the most common questions I get from legislators when we're planning these seminars: what works and what doesn't. And Dr. Weiss has written one of the leading, if not the leading, book on evaluating family programs. She also produces a quarterly newsletter on current issues in evaluation called The Evaluation Exchange. And you can subscribe to this free on her website, and that address is on page 51 of the briefing report. She's also developed the Family Involvement Network of Educators. The acronym is FINE. And this is a network of over 2,000 people interested in promoting stronger partnerships between children's educators, their families, and communities. They also have a free newsletter for that. You can sign up on her website. That's on page 51 of the briefing report. And not only does she write about evaluation and family programs, she also has evaluated a number of programs, including out-of-school time programs, early childhood education initiatives, family support in childcare settings, teacher preparation and family involvement, state and local efforts to develop collaborative child and family services through cross-agency collaboration, and also using results-based accountability for evaluating state-funded child and family services. She's been, since 1990, a consultant to 33 private and public organizations. She's been funded by all the major foundations in the country: Carnegie, Casey, Ford, Kellogg, Knight, MacArthur, Mott, Packard, Pew. And with all this experience, I asked her if she had any advice for parents. And she said that raising her daughter, who's now a freshman in college, has been the most rewarding thing she's ever done. She said being there for your child is tremendously important. And she said the best thing that she ever did to find out what was going on in her child's life was that she volunteered for the carpool every week. She said teens will talk about anything when you're driving them, just like you're not there. So that's the tip for the day. And her topic today is Beyond the School Door: Complementary Learning Opportunities That Support Student Achievement and Development. Thanks a lot, Dr. Weiss.
You know, it really is true. For those of you that have raised teenagers, if you can get in the car with kids, they forget you're there. And if, as you hear what they have to say, you can keep the car on the road, then you are really an accomplished parent. But anyway, I want to, first of all, say thanks to everybody who came to this, but also say it's a real pleasure for me to be back here and see what Karen and her team have achieved with the Family Impact Seminar here. I wish the states I live in, Massachusetts and New York, had one. I think that she pairs careful examination and preparation of research with an understanding of the Wisconsin context and policy situation, creates these wonderful briefs, which have been used by numerous other states, and then tries to create forums like this where people like myself and the others here are briefed to try to be of use to you folks. I write a lot about how you get research into play to inform policy and how evaluators can get their information in to inform what you do. And I have to say that what Karen has done here at the Family Impact Seminar is a real model of how to do this. And she has a group over here that you may or may not know about of people from other states who are coming in to learn how to do this in their states. And I think that's a testimony to the success of what you've achieved. I'm also here because I think that you are struggling with what I think are the critical issues for children, for education, and in fact for the United States. And I'm not just using overblown rhetoric here. I really believe this. I think this is the case because the school finance discussion is not just about how much to spend on whom. It's fundamentally about what adequacy is and what you need to spend to get it. Adequacy is not just reading, writing, and arithmetic, but it's about what you expect all students to know and be able to do in order to be able to contribute to the future of your economy, in order to raise kids, give them a life, in order to be citizens in a democracy. That's what adequacy is about, is getting kids to that point. Part of what I want to talk today about fundamentally is how you're going to achieve adequacy, not just how you're going to fund it. The school finance discussion has gone way beyond arguments about money alone. As James Traub noted in a provocative New York Times article several years ago, labor economists have had a field day proving that school spending is not correlated with school achievement. School funding isn't irrelevant, but you have to figure out what you're going to spend the money on to get results, not just how much money you're going to spend. And while I realize those are inextricably related, what you spend it on is critically important, and I want to talk a bit about this. So I think the key and very difficult questions are, what do you spend money on so that Wisconsin's children and youth have the academic, social, and problem-solving skills they will need? And in this regard, I would point you to thinking about the 21st century skill discussion that's going on. One of my colleagues at Harvard, Dick Murnane, with a colleague at MIT by the name of Levy, have written a book called The New Basic Skills. And they basically argue that in order to thrive in a changing global economy in the 21st century, we're going to have to educate our kids differently and to a higher standard. They're going to have to read, write, and be able to communicate at a high level. They're also going to have to be able to problem solve and get and use data in problem solving. They're going to have to work in teams and a whole set of things that are going to equip them to work in the new economy and get middle-class jobs so they can participate in the community and all the kinds of things that we care about. So what do you spend the money on? And then as Karen's briefing book says, how can you, the legislature, and I would add to her question, others, including the executive branch, courts, parents, business people, concerned citizens, ensure that the investment of state resources will be used to produce better educational outcomes? And I think it's state resources in terms of dollars. I think it's also state resources and public resources in terms of time, energy, commitment, all the things that go into providing a good education for kids. These are very tough and critical questions, and I really believe the future of your state depends on how you're going to answer them over the next few years. I also think Wisconsin is poised to be a model for other places because you already have many of the ingredients in place that are going to be key to improving education outcomes for all and getting kids up to this higher adequacy standard. What you have is already a pretty equitable school finance plan with a lot of state contribution. You set state standards, and you have some means of tracking, kinds of things that we talked earlier about as critical. You have a reasonable per pupil expenditure. You've already gotten some sense of where you are in terms of data and an awareness of things like the fact you have 72 failing districts, that a lot of your minority and disadvantaged kids are underperforming. So you have some diagnosis of where your trouble spots are. You've also got a set of services that you're beginning to put in place, including pre-K, out-of-school time, and some of the other things I'm going to talk about that, and I'm also going to argue, are critical to being able to achieve adequacy. And I think you're ready to move up to the adequacy challenge. Your court has kind of hung a Damocles sword over your head and said, we think adequacy is important. They've stepped back, and they're going to give you guys a chance to achieve it. So I want to talk about some of what I think it's going to take to get there. And in that regard, I think the Leave No Child Behind Act is a gift and a burden. It's a gift because it forces you to track how you're doing. It's a burden because it's hard to figure out how to reach adequacy and make sure, in the time frame at least, that the feds have allowed in with the resources that are available, how are you going to achieve that. But I think the capacity to track and to set high standards for yourselves is a gift. I think we also have, and you'll hear that from the other two speakers, a fair amount of research that's been done in the last 20 years on what contributes to academic achievement. We have some understanding of how to help kids perform, how to reform schools, et cetera. While there are multiple models, I think across them there's some common things that we know help improve schools, help improve instructional practices, and that produce better outcomes for kids. And you'll see that knowledge reflected in a number of the ways in which people have tried to address the adequacy issue. A number of the specific frameworks that you mentioned include attention to what do we know from research about how to improve kids' performance. So you are in a situation, I think, where you have ingredients that allow you now to look at the question of adequacy and say, okay, how are we going to get there? How are we going to do it? I'm going to try to get you outside of the school door, outside of the K-12 framework, to think about what it's going to take to get to a point where all kids in Wisconsin can perform at the level you want them to perform at. I'm going to argue for consideration of what I call complementary learning strategies. These are non-K through 12 learning opportunities. They include things like early childhood and family support, pre-K services and family literacy efforts in the 0 to 5-year-old period, continuous parent involvement from birth through high school, while the kinds of involvement that parents need to do change as the child develops. There is more and more evidence that parent involvement is one of the biggest contributors to kids' school success, whether you are age 5 or age 16. I'm going to argue that another complementary learning strategy or part of this strategy is out-of-school time and summer programs, and you have a young man here in your state that's done some of the compelling work on how important summer is for poor kids in creating an achievement gap, and he's done an evaluation of a program that helps address that gap and shows how you can use summer to positive effect to close the achievement gap for poor kids. These are a whole set of learning resources, if you will, that I think need to be aligned and linked to the effort to create adequacy and improve school outcomes. And I'm going to argue for this in this presentation. And I'm going to argue it for several reasons. I think fast forward. Think 5, 6, 7 years from now. The Leave No Child Left Behind scenario is what I call it, where you have transparent accountability. You know the districts that aren't working, and you know probably the kids in the schools that are having the problems. We are clearer and clearer in our understanding and in our public acknowledgement of how kids are performing. It is going to be clear we are leaving a lot of kids behind. It's also going to be clear that simply focusing on the K through 12 within school agenda is not going to do it. I'm willing to bet, you know, maybe not the ranch, but whatever on that. That's predictable. So ask now, not then. What else can we do to support kids' learning and development? I also think there's 30 years of research that shows schools cannot do it alone. They do not do it alone for most kids, and they certainly cannot do it for economically disadvantaged and other kids at risk. Parents, families, and communities matter enormously in kids' achievement and development. When I started graduate school, in addition to reading Kuhn, Kluhn, and Sugarman, which was one of the first books on school finance, I also read Coleman and was trained by Sandy Jenks and other people who looked at the question of why is it that kids achieve. And they showed that schools matter less than family, neighborhood, and the peer environment. Schools pass along inequality. Schools are not as powerful as we assume. They are necessary, but they are not sufficient. Sandy Jenks and Meredith Phillips did a book recently that Brookings put out on the achievement gap, and they said the best explanation for the achievement gap is middle-class parenting practices, reading to kids, taking them on trips, the out-of-school time opportunities, many of the things I'm talking about. And those are things that schools, by and large, don't deal with, but that we need to deal with in terms of complementary services that are then going to align a set of resources to support families with what schools do in an effort to close the achievement gap and create adequacy so that all kids can meet the standards. There's also increasing research, which I'm not going to give you in chapter and verse. You can go to my website. You can go to things that I and other people have written. In fact, on our website, we try to link you to a lot of things other people have done as well as what we've done. There's an increasing research base that shows these complementary services that I'm talking about do contribute to academic and other critical skill development. Communication, problem solving, ability to work in groups, et cetera. We now are beginning to have a base that says not just that we know, as Sandy and Jenks and other people say, what families do matter. We also are beginning to get information about the kinds of interventions that we can do that, in fact, demonstrably contribute to kids' academic success and other developmental kinds of goals we have for kids. So my argument is we need to align, link existing resources to get more from what we already spend, even if it's not strictly in your school funding formula, and make strategic new expenditures and then make sure they add value. So my proposal is not revenue neutral, but it isn't also about huge new expenditures. It's about better alignment and linkage and maybe funding some new kinds of initiatives very strategically so that you have a linked and aligned complementary learning system that supports the K-12 program. So what does this complementary learning strategy that I'm talking about involve? I think it's getting outside the K-12 framework and outside the school door, opening the school to other supports that they need and aligning those supports so that they complement what the school is trying to do. I don't think it means those complementary learning services only have to be about achieving academic outcomes. If you look back to the new skills that Dick, AOL Time Warner, and a recent national report they did and other people have done who look at the skills we need for workers, it's not just about what we think of as academic achievement. It's a set of social skills and other kinds of things that kids are going to need. So this isn't only about academic kinds of things, and I think that's important. Okay, what would I put together? I'd put together early parenting education. Parents really are kids' first teachers. Build parents' understanding of that, their skills, their capacities. So this means parent education and support. And you have many exemplary programs in Wisconsin that I've chronicled over the years. Means high-quality early childhood education and attention to quality. Somebody asked about the Abbott case. It's not just put together early childhood for the kids in the Abbott districts in New Jersey. The courts also said they have to be quality, and they're tracking to make sure it is. So there's attention to quality and alignment with schools. There's pre-K. You've already begun to do that, and I think that is an incredibly important first step. Economist after economist has looked at the return on investment of pre-K and early childhood services and shown there is a huge return on investment. It also means high-quality out-of-school time programs that link to schools. I would also link the pre-K to the schools. A lot of this is about linkage, so you create a pipeline, a set of services that are linked and aligned, linked together and aligned around a common set of goals they have for kids. So the kids pass through the early childhood into the schools in ways where those institutions are talking with each other across the education system and with the complementary supports outside it. In Pittsburgh, there's a neat program where the pre-K sends the records of the kids' achievement to the school, makes sure that the line or the linkages between the preschool and the school are built so that you get more bang for that early childhood investment. There's lots of examples of this kind of linkage for those of you that are interested in it. So out-of-school time programs. So I'm arguing for alignment. I'm arguing for linkages. I'm arguing always for continuity of parent involvement. I'm arguing for access and targeting of some services. These are the kinds of things I'd want to make sure are set up and aligned in Milwaukee, for example. And I'm arguing also for continuous improvement. Okay. Dick Murnane, in his New Basic Skills, talks about the Zavala School in Austin, Texas. Austin gave has 15 low-achieving schools. They gave all 15 $300,000 extra. Two of them, after a few years, showed gains. He tried to understand why. They showed gains because they focused on achievement. They involved parents so the parents understood their kids were not achieving and began to agitate for school transformation so their kids could achieve. They worked with the teachers so the school could create instructional practices that supported the kids. They developed an out-of-school time program that aligned with what the school was trying to achieve. Murnane and Levy are telling a similar story about a school in Boston, the Richard T. Murphy School, in a book they're putting out this spring. This school has aligned with the state standards. They have clear goals and standards for school progress. They're trying to align curriculum instruction, and they're tracking their progress with respect to how their kids are doing, and they have a commitment to continuous improvement. The new principal came in, a lot of the kids weren't achieving. It's not unlike schools in Milwaukee. They have the AMCAS test, the state test. Nobody had ever looked at those tests to try to figure out what's going on in our school that kids aren't doing well. She got the teachers looking at them. One teacher took all the tests home and put all the stuff on an Excel spreadsheet one weekend because he was so excited about it. That began a conversation about what's happening. Why aren't kids achieving, and what do we need to do differently? The principal then aligned professional development and a lot of other support so the teachers could do what they needed to do to help those kids achieve. And they track their progress. The teachers track their progress with individual kids. They track their progress across the class. The teacher tracks it. Key thing about this principal has created a culture of learning. Everybody is learning in that school. Everybody is getting and using data to figure out how to solve problems and engage in continuous improvement. Everybody's demonstrating the skill at learning. This is important if you think back to Murnane and the new basic skills. It's about getting and using data for problem solving, working in groups, knowing that you're going to continually need to change things to stay on target and produce what you need to produce. It's not about we find the magic widget, magic curriculum, plug it in, and just go on fast forward. That's critical to understand. So considering alignment, linkage of complementary services, getting more bang for the buck. We already spend a lot in the kinds of complementary services that I'm talking about. Wouldn't we get more bang for our outcome buck if we could figure out how to align and link? There's lots of evidence, as I've said, that if you put these services together, it will contribute to kids' academic success. I think you in Wisconsin are poised to do this. You are poised because you clearly are ready to start dealing with the adequacy issues. I think you have a set of reasonably well-funded schools. You have a reasonably developed set of services and out-of-school time, pre-K, those kinds of things. So you've got some of the ingredients on the ground. And I think equally importantly, expertise here in Wisconsin that can help you get further with these things. I track the complementary services I'm talking about. Who's doing the research? Who's doing the evaluation? Who's creating the good models? You guys have a lot of the key people here in Wisconsin who are doing it. Deborah Vandell on out-of-school time. Gay Eastman looking at how you link together early childhood services. You have the expertise in Wisconsin, I think, to take on this challenge. You also have a history of innovation and leadership. And I think if you take this on, you can demonstrate to other places in the United States how one links these complementary services and gets their firepower behind school success. I can hear all the objections. We're only responsible for K through 12. We're looking for, you know, a school funding formula. I think it's important to start thinking outside the box and begin to think about what's it going to take across state government, across legislative committees, to reach the goal that I think is the adequacy goal. And that's that all kids in your state have a shot at a decent job, creating a family and supporting that family, and being members of your communities and citizens in a democracy. So I challenge you to think about this and recognize that a lot of what my next speaker will talk about, or the next speaker will talk about, are school strategies for funding schools that are based on what we know about what works in schools. The silent voice in a lot of that literature is parent involvement, out-of-school time, and those kinds of things. But when you dig deeper in some of the models, you will see that parent involvement is critical to success for all. It's critical to the Comer model, et cetera, et cetera. So think carefully as you think about how you reach adequacy about some of these complementary strategies and how you can bring them to bear to reach your goal. Thank you.
Now we have questions for Dr. Weiss. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Mickey Lehman, the word adequacy is used by everyone. What do you find as the differences of adequacy between the states?
Between the states?
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a technical sense, I'm not a good person to talk about that. Sorry. I mean, I think you need to talk to these gentlemen who are more experts on the school finance stuff than I am. I think states define adequacy in what they set their standards to be, number one, and that varies across states. They also define adequacy in terms of what they're willing to let happen with respect to the percentage of kids that have to meet adequacy. And I'm arguing we ought to be raising the bar on that. I think there's also the adequacy in the sense that I'm talking about, which I think people who are responsible for the citizens of their state, and that's policymakers and probably other folks as well, need to think about. And that's what's it going to take to be adequate so that you have citizens that can perform at the levels they're going to need to perform. So I think there are multiple definitions, and I think you ought to raise the bar high on yourselves.
Good morning, and thank you. Representative Steve Castell, I'm very interested in your comments about linking all the services and all those kinds of needs together. And then you also mentioned that there may be an argument about whether or not that's the state's responsibility. But if we look around, we're already doing a lot of those things and spending those dollars in one fashion or another, but they're not coordinated in any kind of effort. Now, getting from that thought to the reality of linking services and coordinating the effort is difficult in that with every single situation, there's a turf that will be protected. And what you're suggesting requires cooperation from the highest level all the way down to the grassroots. Grassroots people are usually pretty eager. At the highest level is where we have the problems, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions how we can break down those turf walls.
You know, I think one of the things that goes, I've been looking at these kinds of issues for 20 years and know exactly what you're talking about. And I think one thing that's different now is accountability and the fact that we can track progress. We know that schools aren't achieving what they need to achieve. Sooner or later, they're going to realize they need pre-K and some other kinds of out-of-school time services and some other things that are going to help them get there. I think you can make the same kind of argument for other kinds of services. Early childhood people, if they're smart, will realize that if they don't link with schools, it's not going to be long before the evidence shows that the gains that we got from early childhood fade out when they get to elementary school. Well, that says to me that the early childhood people start working with elementary school people so that they can help maintain those gains. It's in everybody's best interest, particularly in an age of accountability, to recognize we're interdependent. So that's one line I would argue. Second thing is I'd start, and you have a lot of people in this room and in this state, that could help you chart a plan for what are the key linkages. I stand here and say link. Okay, there are key linkages that you guys could sort out to work on. Not everything gets linked, but there's some strategic linkages, and I would argue they include things like the period between, or the links between kindergarten and elementary school, pre-K, kindergarten and elementary school. Another key link is between what happens in school and the out-of-school time activities. So if you could pick a couple of strategic ones and create some incentives and rewards and supports for people to link at those critical points, I think you'd begin to see some real gains measurable in terms of student outcomes. Then you got to walk up to the plate and hit the hardest one of all, which is the joint accountability and the joint reward for having achieved this. That it's not just about the fact that my early childhood program did it, it's my early childhood program in alignment with something else. And figuring how you show that, acknowledge and show it, I think is one of the other big stumbling blocks that we need to overcome and figure out how to do.
Representative Therese Berceau, I have a neighborhood in my district which is very low income, very disadvantaged. The schools have tried for probably a dozen years to increase parent involvement in many different innovative ways with little success. So I guess while we all thrill to the idea of parent involvement, and you brought it up again, we aren't finding a real high success rate in three of our schools in terms of actually getting the parents of low-income kids to come to school, even if we arrange for transportation to bring them. Are you aware of any models out there that have tried something really radical that's worked?
Yeah. I mean, if you're interested in, you'll give me your card, I'll send you a lot of stuff, because I have lots of research that shows when the schools do outreach of certain sorts, they can engage parents. And Joyce Epstein, who's a pioneer in this work, showed this in work in Maryland 20 years ago, and there's study after study after study that shows that now. I don't know what your schools are doing, but I'd be willing to bet there's some things they could do that would increase parent involvement, and I'd be happy to share after this, either with them or with you, things that they might do.
Thank you, Dr. Weiss.